Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello, and a very warm welcome to today's broadcast. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick, and I'll be with you for the next half hour. Coming up in a few moments, spotlight on Pope Benedict XVI, his forthcoming weekend in Malta, and a look back at his five-year pontificate with Jesuit Professor Norman Tanner. Well, thanks so much for joining me once again. I'd like to begin today by wishing Pope Benedict XVI a very happy and peaceful birthday. A special one this year as it falls days before we mark the fifth anniversary of his election to the papacy. It was the 19th of April 2005. A birthday which also falls on the eve of his pastoral journey to Malta. The Holy Father, in fact, leaves for this Mediterranean island on Saturday afternoon. Emma McCarthy will be part of our Vatican Radio team travelling there to report for us on all the events connected to the visit. I spoke to her shortly before her departure in an effort to glean some information on the purpose of this trip, but also details pertaining to the schedule of events. Let's listen. So Pope Benedict is about to leave for Malta. I think you know what the theme of this journey is and why he's going there.
The theme for the journey, which is only 24 hours, is nevertheless, we must run aground on some island.
Sounds like a wonderful idea, doesn't it?
It sounds quite frightening, really, doesn't it? It sounds like, you know, hopes for a safe trip. But actually, it's taken from the Acts of the Apostles, from chapters 26 and 27. And these two chapters of the Acts of the Apostles are more commonly known as the Gospel of Malta.
Of course, Malta is linked to St. Paul, isn't it? We all know that. Absolutely. There was a famous shipwreck there.
Yes, indeed, which is why, of course, this theme was chosen. The Gospel of Malta recounts St. Paul's shipwreck on the island of Malta. Speaking to Archbishop Cremona, the Archbishop of Malta, he said the reason they chose this one line is to point out that it was quite providential, this shipwreck, because we all know that St. Paul brought Christianity to Malta. He converted the Maltese, and that's why he's known as the Father of Malta.
Emma, there's a special anniversary connected to this trip, isn't there?
Yes, again, it is connected to St. Paul. It's the 1950th anniversary of the shipwreck of St. Paul.
Tell me, he's leaving on Saturday, the 17th, right, in the afternoon?
He is. I think that we're used to international papal trips being 2 days, 3 days, 4 days. In reality, this trip is a little over 24 hours. He leaves late Saturday afternoon from the Vatican. He's due to arrive in Malta at shortly after 5 p.m. local
time. Time
for tea, as they say. In fact, and he'll be taking tea, we think, with the president. It's his first appointment after the official welcoming ceremony. He will be travelling to the president of the Republic of Malta's palace.
In La Valletta, which is the capital, is it?
In the capital, La Valletta. And of course, the Pope will be staying mainly in La Valletta. He will be travelling briefly to Rabat and Floriana during the 24 hours. But of course, Malta being such a small island, Rabat and Floriana are very, very close to La Valletta.
Well, Rabat has one of the main events taking place, hasn't it?
Yes, indeed. Well, after, of course, the courtesy call to the authorities of Malta, the Pope has his first pastoral appointment with the faithful of Malta, with the Catholics and Christian and Maltese people, and that is in Rabat. Now, Rabat is only about 10 kilometres from Valletta, and it's 10 kilometres uphill, because, of course, it's a steep hill. from La Valletta to Rabat, and there's these tiny winding streets and these little steps that lead up to Rabat. The Pope, however, won't be walking up steps or along tiny streets. It's very interesting to note that in this papal journey, because Malta is so small, because the distances between where Pope Benedict has his major appointments are so small, the only thing he'll be using to get from A to B while in Malta is his Pope Mobile. This will also give the Maltese people a chance to see the Pope while he's there.
Of course, it's an overwhelmingly Catholic nation, Malta.
90%. 90% of the 400,000 are Catholic. So they really are very, very excited and looking forward to Pope Benedict's first trip there to Malta. And his first opportunity to greet them will be in Rabat, as we said, in the Church of St. Paul. Beneath that church, cut into the rock beneath that church, is a grotto. And it is known as the Grotto of St. Paul. And tradition holds that it is here where St. Paul first began preaching to the people of Malta. So it's a very important place. And the Pope will go into the Church of St. Paul. And there he will greet over 200 special guests.
Do we know who they are at all?
We do know who they are. Usually when the Pope has pastoral appointments during his papal trips, one of the first people he greets are the bishops and priests of the nation. This time, however, the first people he will be greeting will be the missionaries of Malta. The priests and nuns, religious and lay missionaries of Malta. Over 200 of them have been chosen to meet the Pope, the first people there to meet him. So that's quite interesting.
It's connected to St. Paul because he was the evangelizer, no?
Connected to St. Paul, absolutely. And also because when...
To the ends of the earth.
To the ends of the earth. And I don't think he expected, if we read the Acts of the Apostles, he did not expect to end up in Malta, but he did. And also it's very interesting that one of the inheritances that he left the people of Malta was he instilled in them this desire to be missionaries. In fact, they're one of the most missionary churches, particularly in Europe. They send priests and nuns and lay missionaries throughout the world. So it's
after the Irish, of course.
After the Irish.
Then on Sunday, he has a couple of important appointments. He has Holy Mass in the morning, is that right?
Yes, of course. This will be the main appointment with the ordinary, everyday Catholics of Malta, the families, men, women of Malta. It's going to be held in what used to be known as Granary Square, but now is called Floriana Square, which is the biggest square in the capital, Valletta. Now, it only holds up to 10 to 12,000 people because even though it's the capital's biggest square, it's small by European city standards. So it'll be quite interesting to see where the other tens of thousands expected to turn up for the Mass will actually manage to fit. That is the big liturgical appointment during this 24 hours. During this Mass, you will also meet and greet the Bishop of Gozo. Gozo is the small island next to Malta. During this visit, the Pope will not be travelling to Gozo, but the Bishop of Gozo, Mario Grech, said the entire diocese is moving to La Valletta to greet the Pope. And while there, he will be presenting the Bishop of Gozo with a golden rose. We all know that this is one of the highest honours that the Pope can bestow on a diocese. And the reason, of course, being is because there's a very important Marian sanctuary on the island of Gozo. So the Pope's way of saying, although I can't make it to see you this year, you are in my thoughts, is, of course, bestowing this golden rose on Gozo's Marian sanctuary.
And then the afternoon, before he gets back to Rome, he has another interesting meeting with young people, no?
Yeah, there's something here that's quite similar to his papal trip to Australia. During the afternoon, the Pope will make his way from the Apostolic Nunciature, where he will be staying overnight on Saturday, to the waterfront on, I think it's near Valletta, and then he'll be crossing La Valletta Harbour, which is a natural harbour, by boat. Something we've seen him do quite frequently in the past. We've seen him do it in Cologne, we've seen him do it in Sydney. And it underlines the fact that this, of course, is a seafaring nation. The sea is very important to Malta, so he'll be crossing the harbour by boat to arrive on the other waterfront of La Valletta, and there he'll be meeting the young people of Malta, and he'll be speaking to them there. So that'll be quite interesting to see what he says. It's another important point of all Pope Benedict's trips, is that he always makes sure that he has an appointment to speak to the young people, pretty much in the footsteps of John Paul II, I think.
Of course, John Paul II went there twice, no?
He went there twice indeed in the 1990s. So while Malta is used to papal trips, however, the bishop speaking to them this week underlined that they really are looking forward to this first occasion to meet and greet Pope Benedict the 16th.
Well, let's hope you get fine weather there.
Yes, indeed.
Particularly as the Pope is going to be sailing from one port to the other.
And let's hope that they don't run aground on some other island.
A And a big thank you there to Emma McCarthy, who's already in Malta awaiting the Pope. Be sure to enjoy her reports from there, either by tuning in to our features or our news broadcasts, and also by checking out our website at www.vaticanradio.org. Now to mark Benedict XVI's birthday, which, as I mentioned, falls days before the fifth anniversary of his election to the See of Peter, I'd like to share with you a conversation with no other than the Dean of Church History at the Pontifical Gregorian University here in Rome. He's Jesuit Professor Norman Tanner, who was kind enough to sit down with me in our studios here for a long chat. Stay tuned. We're going to look at the pontificate of Pope Benedict XVI, the second non-Italian pope in many years.
Well, that's right, as you said. Pope Benedict is the second non-Italian since the early 16th century. Pope Adrian the VI was from Holland in the early 1500s, and then we had nearly 500 years of Italian popes, and then, of course, John Paul II, and now Pope Benedict.
Pope Benedict had some shoes to step into. I mean, he had over a quarter of a century pontificate with someone who was very much of a charismatic figure. It was difficult for him to move in, wasn't it?
Well, it was a remarkable and long pontificate, as you said, but the papacy during the centuries has had a variety of characters, and indeed that seems to be God's plan for this very exalted office of papacy, that we need and have had different characters. So that's right that there should be a successor, obviously.
But do you think Pope Benedict had trouble fitting into the pontificate that came before him or not?
I think he's been extremely respectful both of his predecessor and of his own character, of his own personality, for which both things we're grateful.
Like yourself, he was once a university professor, no? Is there something that you can read into that way?
Well, yes, we're grateful to have that quality that he has of a serious engagement with theology, serious engagement with the intellectual world, and that's a very precious gift which is valued in the present Pope.
What would you say the hallmark of his pontificate so far has been?
The Pope's primary purpose is to be a guardian of the faith, a guardian of the Christian tradition. So I think that preservation of all that Christ has given us is the preeminent and most important gift and contribution. So any kind of developments, emphases must be shown within that basic context of conservation of the faith, which is his primary duty.
From a personal point of view, what would you think the hallmark of his pontificate is?
Well, perhaps I'd just say a word about personality in general in the popes. It's quite a recent phenomenon. It's only since, really, the late 19th century with Pius IX that's been focus on the actual personality. Before that, most people would have had no image, no photograph, obviously, of the Pope. And in some ways, it's healthier. There was simply more respect just for the office. But the interest in the personality has very much developed since Pope Pius IX and in the late 1800s, and then, of course, you might say developed through Pius XII and the very charismatic figure of John the 23rd and John Paul II. So I would like to emphasise that the present Pope too would see his office as much more important than his personality, I think.
I think there are a lot of indicative things. I mean, he's written various encyclicals, and they describe him anyway as a Pope of the Word, il Papa della Parola here in Italy. Would you agree with that?
Certainly, surely. He's a man of the Word of God, and he's written three important, significant encyclicals, which within 3 years is a remarkable achievement, yes. Caritas in Veritate, his most recent one, Spe Salvi, the one before, and his first encyclical, Deus Caritas Est. So there we have two of the three, you might say, fundamental virtues of hope and charity covered in his encyclicals. And we know he's a man of faith, so we have all those three great virtues covered in his three important letters to the whole church, the whole world, of faith, hope and charity.
Want to mention anything about those particular encyclicals?
They have a depth and elegance, and they have been well received. And they are, in a sense, exhortations to Catholics in the first place, to all Christians and to all people. They're not encyclicals in the sense of new theological definitions. In a sense, they're encyclicals, of course, but exhortations, theological exhortations, in a sense, sermons for the whole Catholic, the whole Christian people, the wider world.
You mentioned the word elegance in his writings. I think that comes across, doesn't it? There's some gems in his writings at times.
Oh, undoubtedly, he's a fluent and elegant writer, both in conciseness of thought and real content in what he has to say.
Is there any particular moment or passage or speech that you would like to highlight?
I think the three titles of the encyclicals I've just mentioned go to the heart of the Christian message and in themselves are very evocative of his deep Christian spirituality and also his evangelical apostolic initiative and outlook. He wishes to bring the Christian message to all people, to deepen it for those who are already Christians and to make it with its full force and attractiveness to people worldwide.
Why do you think that when he speaks to the faithful during his Wednesday audience each week, he always goes back to the fathers of the church?
He's, of course, a scholar of significance, and the fathers of the church have always been an inspiration for his theology. We know that before he was pope, he was for many years a lecturer in theology, professor of theology in German universities, and the fathers were integral to his teaching there. So it's no surprise that he draws on fathers of the church, the early writers of the church, in what he speaks in his weekly audiences and in other sermons and in other ways. So that's absolutely as you would expect.
He took on the name Benedict, which indicates all kinds of things. I mean, you know, there was another Benedict, a Pope Benedict at the beginning of the 20th century. But he also latched on, he said so himself in a speech, latched on to the figure of Saint Benedict, which is the monastic tradition.
Well, I think it's a very beautiful and, you might say, skillful choice too. We had John Paul I and John Paul II. John Paul III would have sounded a bit too much in that line, you might say, of names. And then before that, of course, we'd had John the 23rd and a line of piouses. So Benedict, to go back to Benedict the 15th, as it were, the beginning of this century, a Benedict who made every effort to bring peace in the First World War, emphasizes one aspect of our present Pope's outlook and wish to bring peace to the world. He's very much emphasized that. It also emphasizes, of course, his spiritual tradition and going back and monastic appreciation of the religious life and monastic life in particular, and prayer going back to Saint Benedict, of course, the founder of the Benedictine order in the 500s. So in all sorts of ways, it was a very skillful and beautiful choice which expresses many of his deepest aspirations and wishes for his pontificate and thereby for the world of our day.
It indicates that his point of departure is in line with European tradition, no?
That's right. Benedict, of course, was a man of Europe, and one of the key approaches of his pontificate is to reinvigorate Christianity and Catholicism in particular within Europe. For many centuries, the heartland of the Catholic Church, and the wish to reinvigorate Catholicism, Christianity within Europe is at the heart. On the other hand, St. Benedict became a world figure with Benedictine monasticism, in many ways the foundation of monasticism throughout the Western Church, where it spread throughout the world to all the other continents, to America, to Africa, to Asia. So it's also, I think, a worldwide choice which Pope Benedict himself would very much appreciate. He's made great efforts to bring the Catholic message, the Christian message, to all the continents of the world, both through his travels and in many ways has wished to make Catholicism truly a worldwide and universal message.
When you watch him travel sometimes, you mentioned the travels, when he went, for example, to Africa in 2009, you got a sense of amazement for other cultures that he was not too familiar with, no? Isn't there a sense of amazement in his pontificate towards other cultures?
Well, yes, indeed. He's been principally based here, of course, in Europe, and for many years, of course, prefect of the Congregation of the Doctrine of the Faith based here in Rome. So his life has been centered here in Rome, although through this have met many people from other continents, but although he had made some travels outside Europe, and especially Rome and Germany has been the base of his life, so it's no surprise that at a relatively advanced age, visiting other countries and continents brings both delight and surprise.
And of course, another of his hallmark words is joy, isn't it?
Yes, indeed. At the heart of his message is the joyfulness, the privilege of being Christians, the joy that Christ brings us, the joy that we too can bring to one another.
He's also someone who's not afraid of keeping to his guns, as it were. He has a very clear idea of what the doctrine of the church is about. He's not frightened of other people's opinions or comments or criticism, is he?
Well, that's right. He's had a long life, both as a theologian and as head of the doctrinal commission here in the Vatican. So theology and to preserve the orthodoxy of the faith has been at the heart of his life right from the beginning. Obviously, that's an absolutely central requirement of the Pope, to preserve the faith in its integrity.
If you had to write a paper about this pontificate, this five-year pontificate, what would you highlight in particular?
It's a five-year pontificate, and therefore is now a substantial pontificate. I would go back to what I had said earlier. A key thing is it's an office, and I would focus on the Pope's preservation, respect for his office, and that he has done the best in his office. And I would put personal considerations very much in second place.
Can you give me three adjectives as to how to describe him?
He's a man of prayer. He's a man of deep Christian life, a man who's open to every dimension of human existence, the intellectual, the personal, the humorous too.
But he goes on writing while he's Pope, no?
Well, that is an obligation of Popes, and as you've mentioned, he's written three encyclicals, but he's also furthered works that he's already written and contributed new ideas. But that's correct. That is slightly unusual for a Pope to write in a private capacity, as you might say.
I mean, you're a historian. If you had to sort of... comparisons are odious, so I don't say compare, but if you had to find similarities with another recent Pope, who would it be with?
Well, maybe with his predecessor of his same name, Benedict XV, who had a reign of, 6 years, and lived in a very difficult time during the First World War. And
he was elected Pope in 1914, is that right?
Thank you, yes. And a man of thoughtfulness, a man of prayer, a man who also wrote encyclicals. I think he would be the one I would perhaps... And in both cases, as a matter of fact, not highlighting the personality too much. We think of what Benedict XV and what Benedict XVI have done as popes, and perhaps less widely appreciated from the personal characteristics like John XXIII or Pope John Paul II. So also in that way, I would think that Benedict XV might be his closest comparison, at least in the last 100 years, and I think he too might be pleased with that comparison.
At the beginning of the pontificate anyway, he was often likened to Pope Paul VI, who was actually the person to create him cardinal, if I'm not mistaken. Do you think there is a similarity there in terms of intellectual capacity? Or
certainly in the sense that Paul VI was also... a man deeply of prayer and thoughtfulness and serious interest in theology. Well, a long pontificate in the end, from 1963 to 78, 15 years, and became Pope considerably younger than the present Pope. And, of course, the great event in his early years was the Second Vatican Council, with which Pope Benedict has not had to deal with any similar ecumenical council. So there are similarities, but I think the differences are also perhaps more significant.
Do you think there have been any major historical events that have affected the pontificate of Pope Benedict?
Well, we've had the continuing fragility of the world situation, both the wars we've had, the tensions between East and West, also the recent economic difficulties. And interestingly, I think Benedict's approach on the economic side has been one of the most appreciated and least expected. And Pope Benedict had not written earlier before becoming Pope on economy, at least not in a major way, and yet he's said some very helpful things about the present world economic situation. Yes, the importance of solidarity between people of all countries, generosity, and finally, the Christian message has to help in the world situation of solidarity, both among Christians and also between Christians and other peoples of other faiths. And on that particularly, he's been very strong on urging the cooperation of Christians with the other great faiths of the world and of all people of goodwill.
From an ecumenical point of view, he's been involved in a lot of areas, no?
Certainly. I think at the heart of his wishes would be for the greater unity of Christians, although obviously he is realistic. I think another important point is that he's emphasized the unity that already exists. So we constantly pray and work for greater unity, but it's also important to remember the fundamental unity which especially Vatican II emphasized, the unity which already exists, which is much greater than the disunity. So that's a great gift that after 2,000 years, Christians are so united on basic fundamentals, a great thing to be grateful for. And I think the present Pope has put the outstanding differences within that positive framework.
He's the first Pope, I think this is the first, to be dubbed the Green Pope, isn't he?
Indeed, and that's perhaps another unexpected development, and he's engaged in an area which the world sees as tremendously important, the whole ecological, are we overdeveloping and damaging the earth, the globe which God has given to us, and he's made a number of, not only in statements, I understand that the Vatican itself has installed various energy-saving measures, so perhaps an unexpected but very positive development of the pontificate.
Of course, it comes out of his idea of creation, no, doesn't it?
Absolutely, and going back to the roots of Scripture, that we should be careful of the wonderful earth, the treasure which God has given us, and manage it in a way which is wise and careful about other people.
Thinking back to when he was elected, do you think there have been surprises?
Yes and no. Pope Benedict has been true to himself, and he's remained in those as a theologian, as a man of charity, as a man of thought, of consideration. I think his exposure to the wider world, both partly through travels and by partly through meeting so many people from other countries and continents, which a pope meets, as it were, for the first time, has broadened his approach, his sympathies, and his positive qualities, which already exist.
And warm thanks there go to the Dean of Church History at the Pontifical Gregorian University here in Rome, Jesuit Professor Norman Tanner. And that brings me up to time. Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed this broadcast. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick, and before I end, I'd like to renew my birthday greetings to Pope Benedict XVI. Meanwhile, should you wish to check out our website, the address is www.vaticanradio.org. Bye for now. You've been listening to Vatican Radio's English programme. Laudetur Jesus Christus.